Leonard Nimoy was an actor, director, photographer, writer, singer, and songwriter, but it's likely that he'll always be remembered most as the iconic and beloved Mr. Spock on the Star Trek television series. In a new documentary called For the Love of Spock, his son, filmmaker Adam Nimoy, pays tribute to his father's life and work just in time for the 50th anniversary of the premiere of Star Trek, which is today. The film opens at the Leonard Nimoy Thalia Theater at Symphony Space this Friday. It's also available on video on demand, and I'm very pleased it has brought Adam Nimoy to our show. Hello.
Hello.
How did your father react when you told him they want to make a documentary about Spock?
Well, he was effusive, enthusiastic, very overwhelmed with emotion, and by which I mean to say he simply said, yeah, that sounds great, let's do it.
Did you intend that would be the focus of the film? When did it become as much about his life and the popularity of the series?
Well, initially, the objective was just to do wall-to-wall Spock. The film was going to be specifically about Spock and only Spock. My father had a great sense of humility, and he did not want to make it into the Leonard Nimoy show about his life and legacy as an artist. So that was the floor plan that we had for the entire film. But when my father passed away, there was such an outpouring of emotion for the loss of not only Mr. Spock, but the artist, the Renaissance man, the humanitarian Leonard Nimoy, that it became clear at that point that we were going to expand the film to include his life.
How much of the film was shot before his death in February 2015?
Absolutely nothing.
Really? You do have footage of him talking about...
We have a lot of footage of him that we were able to find archivally, a number of interviews with him. We have his audiobook, I Am Spock, which was very helpful to us. I had told my father in January of last year that we really should get a camera crew in to tape him, but he felt okay. His health was actually stable, and his reaction was, what's your hurry? We have till 2016. But then by February, he was gone, surprisingly.
He grew up in a working-class immigrant neighborhood in Boston's West End. Were his parents supportive of his desire to become an actor?
To the contrary, they were devastated. They're Russian immigrants, and they wanted their sons to become doctors and lawyers, ideally. My father was never academically inclined, and for him to say to them that he wanted to become an actor was like saying to them he wanted to go join the circus.
Although he did have a very strong intellectual side.
Correct. He had a very fine mind for a man with so little formal education.
He says in the film that prior to Star Trek, he'd never had a job that lasted more than 2 weeks. Was he always concerned about finding work and supporting the family?
Yeah. I mean, he was a hustler. He was that way when he was a kid in Boston, and he was that way in L.A. He ran a number of odd jobs. And we remember these, my sister and I, the gumball machines. He managed apartment buildings. He serviced these fish tanks. He worked in a pet store. He was always, and then he did little bit parts on TV shows and movies occasionally as well.
But he didn't become a waiter like so many actors who are struggling.
He did scoop, before we were born, he did scoop ice cream at Will Wright's in Los Angeles.
And when did he begin acting? How old was he?
I think he said he was 8 years old in a production of Hansel and Gretel in a playhouse in the West End of Boston.
Was he still scuffling when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was a real hustle. he was a wonder to behold. I mean, this is a guy who could do just about anything, and he did just about everything to keep us afloat.
How did he meet Gene Roddenberry?
That happened in an episode that Dad appeared in called The Lieutenant. Gene was a writer-producer on that show, and Gene liked the work my dad did. And there was something about my dad's appearance that inspired Gene, because he had this idea for a science fiction series in mind, including an alien on the crew of the Enterprise, of the spaceship. And Dad seemed to represent physically what he had in mind for that character.
Those cheekbones.
The cheekbones. Absolutely, and he thought, and as we say in the, as we quote Gene as saying in For Love of Spock, he felt that a pair of pointed ears would go well with those cheekbones.
But the network didn't like those pointy ears and the thick slanted eyebrows.
Yeah, the network was NBC, and at the time, they were very much a family-oriented network of sing-along with Mitch and Andy Williams and Bob Hope specials, and the idea of putting a guy who looked demonic on TV for their family audience was of great concern to them, and they told Gene to after he delivered the first pilot episode to get rid of everybody in the cast, particularly Mr. Spock.
And to get rid of the ears, the pointy ears. They were afraid that it wouldn't go over well in the South.
That's what I've read, and that's what my father claimed as well. They had a huge following in the Bible Belt in the South, and that was a big part of their audience, and they were concerned about losing them.
Wasn't the first pilot of the series rejected because NBC thought it was too cerebral?
That is commonly held lore, yes. They thought it was too cerebral and the audience wouldn't understand what was going on.
Americans are so stupid. That's why NBC right now is in such trouble, I think. They told Roddenberry to fire, as you said, the entire cast. But he did fire most of them. He retained your father.
Yeah, he felt very strongly about the character. For some reason, he just believed that they really needed an alien, at least a mixed alien. You know, Spock was half human and half Vulcan. It was essential to keep him on board the crew of the Enterprise. This is an intergalactic mission. They have been traveling through, you know, the universe and visiting all these planets. They should have somebody from one of these planets on the crew.
Had your father known William Shatner before he began working on the series?
They had met briefly on an episode of Man from U.N.C.L.E. They both appeared as guest stars.
What was it like for your family when the first episode of Star Trek aired 50 years ago today? Was it just another job?
Oh, no. We were waiting for this with great anticipation. This is the first time my father was in a starring role in a TV series. And as
was he the star, or was Shatner considered
to be the star? It says also starring. I mean, this is an issue of debate, which we talk about it at length in For the Love of Spock. The fact is that we were very excited about this project. They had been in production for a couple months before it aired, and as a kid, I was watching a lot of TV, and I spent a lot of time at the newsstands looking for anything in the print media that had a picture of my father in it.
And there were a lot, actually.
There was, it took a while. I waited and waited and waited, looking for images of my dad or any write-ups on Star Trek. There was very little at first. But then, in the month of September, the stuff started showing up.
I'm speaking with Adam Nimoy. His film, For the Love of Spock, will be shown this Friday. It will open this Friday at the Leonard Nimoy Thalia Theater at Symphony Space. Also available on VOD, video on demand. When was the Thalia renamed the Leonard Nimoy Thalia?
Well, this is several years ago. They were renovating the symphony space. The theater needed desperate renovation, and my father and my stepmother Susan felt that this was a great opportunity for them to give back to the arts. And so they made a sizable contribution. The theater is beautiful now. We actually had a screening For the Love of Spock for our Kickstarter supporters a couple months ago, and it's a fabulous venue to see the film.
I used to go to the Thalia before it was renovated, and what I remember is that when people bought candy or soda in the back, you heard it while the Japanese film was being screened. How much input did your father have in creating the character of Spock? How did he come up with that Vulcan greeting and the hand gesture, live long and prosper?
Yeah, these were things that he brought to the part on the day of production. Gene clearly was the, you know, the clever mind and the creative mind that brought us Mr. Spock. But my dad really felt that there were opportunities to enrich the character with such things as the Spock nerve pinch. And the Vulcan salute. The nerve pinch was something that he suggested to the director on the set when it was written in the script that he was to hit Kirk, the bad Kirk. Kirk's personality was split. He was to hit him on the head with the butt of a phaser, and Dad thought, well, he's a Vulcan. He must have some special power that would be more, you know, be less obvious, less brutal in terms of force, and so he came up with this idea with the nerve pinch. And the same thing with the Vulcan salute. This was something from my father's childhood. The salute is really a sign that the Kohanim, the chief priests, on the high holy days of the Jewish New Year, used to bless the congregation. They put their hands out in that formation, and they chant a special prayer. So Dad thought that that might be an interesting way to greet one another, and it's seemed to have survived for the past five decades.
He says in the film that Spock wasn't supposed to be a character without emotions, but that he played him as a guy trying to keep his emotions in check. Was this to some degree a reflection of his own personality?
Well, yeah. I mean, Dad, my father was a very reserved person and sometimes difficult to get to or to relate to or to connect with. He could be very cool at home. And that was, you know, a lot of the way that Spock was written. But what's very interesting is that Dad played Spock as having a human side with a lot of emotional, a lot of feelings. He has feelings, but he has this sense of emotional control, and he struggles with these feelings. And this is why it's so interesting to get a close-up on Spock when he's dealt, you know, a dramatic. He's dealing with a dramatic situation, and we use clips from the show to kind of illustrate that in our documentary. So it just made for much more richer and interesting inner life for Spock if there's a lot of turmoil going on, and people have really related to that,
especially when he had to deal with women.
Yes, particularly when he had to deal with space women who were interested in Mr. Spock.
What was life like for your family while your father was working on the series? Did he stay in character when he got home from work?
Yeah, this was a big issue at home. He liked to stay in character. He talks about this in For Love of Spock, the fact that he was, you know, living as Spock 12 to 14 hours a day, 5 days a week for 10 months out of the year, and it's very difficult. It was difficult for him, at least, to jump in and out of character. But even when he was not in his Spock character, Dad could be very cool, very different, very hard to connect with. And sometimes I'd actually have to say to him at home, Dad, I need a little more emotion. I need a little more reaction. I need more information from you. Please get out of your Spock bag.
How old were you when he started doing the series?
I was 9 when they started shooting. I was 10 years old when it aired.
So was it at all confusing to see your father as a character who's so different? The children of movie stars often have problems. In fact, a lot of us have problems separating reality from the fantasy on the screen.
Well, but I've been watching my dad on TV doing bit roles and supporting roles for a number of years. Before Star Trek even came along. So I knew that, I knew the difference between, fact and fantasy at that point.
When did the fan mail start arriving, and didn't people start driving to your house?
Yeah, we had this incident where 16 Magazine, which was a very popular fanzine of that period, for some reason published our home address as the mailing address for the fan mail. And shortly thereafter, this is probably in the fall or maybe early of 1967, we just were inundated with fan letters.
The story of Star Trek has already become legend. It was canceled after just 3 seasons because the ratings were poor. And then it became a phenomenon, one of the biggest moneymakers in the history of show business.
Well, it was the syndication market. It just exploded and really found
its
audience.
Why do you think it worked well in syndication when it didn't work well the first time?
Well, a lot of it had to do with the time it was available. The show died because it was moved to Friday night, and Friday nights are really the graveyard shift for most TV series. Most people are out at that time. There weren't DVRs then to tape the show.
And then your father went on Mission Impossible. He was given a recurring role, but he decided not to stay.
He decided not to stay because he thought it would be a challenge to play different roles. My dad always aspired to be a character actor, and he thought this was his opportunity to fulfill that fantasy for his career. But it turned out that these different roles that he was playing as Paris, the Master of Disguise on Mission Impossible, were really just wardrobe and makeup changes. There was no depth to their character.
Did he feel trapped by the Spock identification?
I don't really think so. I mean, he wrote an autobiography in the mid-70s entitled I Am Not Spock, and people took that to mean that he's trying to distance himself from the character, that he didn't like the character. But that title was really to address this problem that he was having with fans who saw him as Mr. Spock. They would confuse him with Spock the character, and he was trying to tell everybody, my name is Leonard Nimoy. I don't come from Vulcan. I come from Boston. But I think he had a lot of reverence for Spock, and he, I think, acknowledged repeatedly that Spock created a lot of opportunity for him that he otherwise might not have had.
Had he done much live theater before he took on the role of Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof?
No, he had done some, certainly, before Star Trek, but not to the extent that he would embark on during the 70s. He did about, I think, 12 productions during that decade.
Was that when he first started singing professionally?
No, he was singing professionally when Star Trek was on with these albums that they were recording, beginning in 67, I believe. 5 albums came out before, I think, even Tevye showed up.
And then the first Trek movie opened in 1979. 5 more followed. Did your father want to participate?
He did. He did want to participate, he was very happy to be back with the Star Trek family. They were a little disappointed in the first installment, that first feature. But then we had Nick Meyer directing and writing Star Trek II, which really got the franchise back on track, and my dad was pretty happy about that.
And then he started writing and directing.
Yeah, he was mostly producing, directing, beginning with Star Trek III, and the pinnacle really of his career, or part of it, was Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, which was a huge commercial and critical success for him.
But then he also directed Three Men and a Baby, and he hosted the TV series In Search Of. And then he got into photography, and that's what brought him to our show some years ago. By the way, we have a link to that 2002 interview with Leonard Nimoy on our show page at wmic.org/Lopate. Did your relationship with your father improve as you got older?
Yeah, we had a lot of ups and downs in our lives together. We were estranged for several years. We both found recovery independent of one another, and I think through the tools that we learned in that program, we were able to reconnect. And for the last 4 or 5 years of his life, we were very close.
And when did you start directing films?
I transitioned out of practicing law into directing television. This was back in the 90s, really around 1992. Dad was very helpful in that transition.
My great thanks to Adam Nimoy. His film, For the Love of Spock, will be opening at the Leonard Nimoy Thalia Theater at Symphony Space this Friday. That's on the Upper West Side, also available on VOD. It's been a real pleasure having you here.
Thank you, Leonard. I appreciate it.